Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anne Ball, Bruce Alpert, and Brian Lynn. Later, Anna Mateo will tell us what's trending today, and Jill Robbins will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Anne Ball.
Democrat Hillary Clinton has conceded the American presidential election to Republican Donald Trump. Most political experts and voter studies had predicted Clinton would win the election. But after very close voting in many states across the country, Trump received the required 270 electoral votes early Wednesday to win the White House. In a speech Wednesday to supporters, Clinton said she was sorry for the loss, which she described as painful. But she said Americans owe Trump an open mind and a chance to lead. Clinton is a former Secretary of State, U.S. Senator, and wife of two-term President Bill Clinton. She called Trump early Wednesday morning to congratulate him on his victory. She said that she told him she would work with him for the good of the country. She said, "America is more deeply divided than we thought." Clinton said she hopes Trump will be a successful president for all Americans. She urged her supporters to please never stop believing that fighting for what's right is worth it. If she had won, Clinton would have become the first female president of the United States. During her speech, she said she was disappointed that she had not shattered that highest and hardest glass ceiling. She also spoke directly to young girls and women watching her speech.
Never doubt that you are valuable and powerful and deserving of every chance and opportunity in the world to pursue and achieve your own dreams.
During his acceptance speech to supporters early Wednesday, Trump congratulated Clinton on her campaign effort.
Hillary has worked very long and very hard over a long period of time, and we owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I mean that very sincerely.
The president-elect also called on all Americans to unite.
To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. It's time.
Trump's victory ended one of the most divisive presidential campaigns ever. Both Clinton and Trump repeatedly said the other candidate was unfit to serve as president. The win also ends 8 years of Democratic Party rule in the White House. Political experts have said the change could lead to the undoing of many of President Barack Obama's policies. Obama said Wednesday he had congratulated Trump by phone and that he will meet with him Thursday at the White House. Obama promised a smooth change of leadership. He also urged the country to join him in supporting Trump's efforts to succeed as president. We all want what's best for this country, he said.
We try really hard to persuade people that we're right. And then people vote. And then if we lose, we learn from our mistakes, we do some reflection, we lick our wounds, we brush ourselves off, we get back in the arena. We go at it. We try even harder the next time.
House of Representatives Speaker Paul Ryan, who leads the Republican majority in the House, said Trump had managed to win a great political battle. Ryan was slow to back Trump's candidacy and had publicly disagreed with him on several issues. But on Wednesday, he said he was excited about working with him. I'm Ann Ball.
President-elect Donald Trump Wednesday called on Americans to come together as one united people. But he faces a divided nation as he prepares to take the presidency from Barack Obama on January 20th, 2017. Trump spoke to his supporters in New York City after Clinton, a Democrat, called him to congratulate him on his victory. In his speech, Trump praised Clinton. Although he had called her Crooked Hillary during much of the campaign, Trump told his supporters that Clinton should be thanked for working very hard over a long period of time for the United States. Hillary Clinton is ahead now in the popular vote. In other words, more voters overall chose her. But Trump earned the electoral votes in enough states to win the presidency. He did so, in part, by getting the votes of workers in industrial states such as Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Trump promised to bring back factory jobs there by renegotiating trade deals and limiting immigration. During his campaign, Trump called for a ban on Muslim immigration. But in recent months, Trump said he would order better background checks for people from nations with terrorism problems. He also promised to stop illegal immigration. Trump said many Mexican immigrants are bringing crime and drugs to the United States. Kellyanne Conway, Trump's campaign manager, urged Americans to give him a chance. Give him a chance as your president-elect, like we all did with President Obama and we all did with President Bill Clinton, she said. Last month, The Washington Post spoke to voters in the state of Virginia. It found more than half the people supporting Clinton said they did not have close friends or family voting for Trump. It also found that more than half the people voting for Trump did not have close friends or family voting for Clinton. Liliana Mason teaches political science at the University of Maryland. She said many Americans not only do not know people who voted for a different candidate, but get news about the campaign that matches their opinions. It might explain why Trump supporters expected his victory, while Clinton supporters were surprised. Most pre-election polls and experts predicted a Clinton victory. Despite the divisions between Trump and Clinton supporters, 2016 was not the most divisive presidential election, said Paula Baker. She is a presidential historian at The Ohio State University. I just finished teaching a course on presidential elections. Throughout, we wondered whether this was the worst ever, and clearly, no, consider 1800 for divisiveness. In 1800, Thomas Jefferson defeated John Adams after saying his opponent and his party would bring a government of witches opposed to freedom. Obama announced that he will meet with Trump at the White House on Thursday to discuss the transition of power. It may be an uneasy meeting. Trump argued for several years that Obama was not a legal citizen of the United States and therefore was not eligible for the presidency. During the campaign, Obama said Trump is not qualified to be president. He also campaigned hard for Hillary Clinton, who was his Secretary of State during his first term. Trump is expected to move quickly to repeal Obama's successes, including a law providing health care coverage for Americans, environmental and labor rules, and an international climate change agreement. However, even Trump may face problems trying to advance his agenda in Congress. Billy Tozan is a former congressman from Louisiana. He said, "As Americans, we hate gridlock, but we don't want compromise." Yet Trump will have an advantage. His party, the Republicans, not only took the White House, but held on to their majorities in the House and Senate in Tuesday's election. I'm Bruce Alpert.
The Republican Party will keep control of the United States Congress after nationwide elections Tuesday. The party's candidates captured at least 51 of the U.S. Senate's 100 seats, while the Democratic Party controls at least 47. The Republican majority could rise to 53 when results from two additional races are confirmed. The new Congress will take office in January. The Republican majority in the House is likely to be smaller than its current majority, but not by as much as recent opinion surveys had predicted. Having a majority in Congress is important because the party in power leads committees, sets the legislative agenda, and can order investigations. With the election of Republican Donald Trump as president, political experts are wondering about relations between the Trump White House and Congress. The current Congress has blocked many policies of Democratic President Barack Obama. This has resulted in a lack of action on many issues in both the House and Senate. This legislative inaction is often described as political gridlock. Numerous studies have repeatedly shown that American voters have grown tired of continuing gridlock in Washington. One of the new Senate's first items of business will be filling an opening on the U.S. Supreme Court. President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to replace Justice Antonin Scalia, who died in February. But Republicans refused to hold hearings or vote on the nomination. They said that since the nomination came with less than a year remaining in Obama's term, the next president should choose Scalia's replacement. Being an incumbent from either party helped most of the returning Senate candidates win. Among the winners were Florida's Marco Rubio, who decided to seek re-election after ending his campaign for the presidency. Arizona Republican John McCain won his sixth term in the Senate at age 80 in what was likely his last campaign. Another incumbent, New York Democrat Chuck Schumer, was easily reelected. There had been reports that he would have been a candidate for majority leader if the Democrats had taken control of the Senate. One exception to the incumbent winners was Republican Mark Kirk in Illinois. He lost to two-term Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth, a Democrat, by more than 700,000 votes. Duckworth served in the U.S. military in Iraq, where she lost both her legs when a helicopter was shot down. She says she will try to make issues of importance to military veterans a priority in the Senate. I'm Brian Lynn.
A well-known study in 1979 found that people who socialize with others live longer than people who keep to themselves. A new study shows that socializing online may have health benefits as well. To test the theory, researchers from Harvard, Yale, Northeastern, and the University of California at San Diego looked at the Facebook profiles of 12 million people. Then they compared the profiles with the California Department of Public Health records over a two-year period from 2011 to 2013. The researchers found that people with more friends online were less likely to die than similar people who were not as connected. The researchers published their findings in an article titled "Online Social Integration is Associated with Reduced Mortality Risk" in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Not all Facebook usage was connected to a longer life. Getting friend requests related to reduced mortality, but sending friend requests did not. Similarly, posting photos and being tagged in photos was connected to living longer, but sending messages on Facebook was not. People who were tagged in many photos had the lowest mortality rates in the study. Some diseases had a significant reduction of mortality with Facebook users. Deaths from infections, diabetes, mental illness or dementia, heart disease, stroke, other cardiovascular diseases, liver disease, and homicide all were significantly lower for Facebook users than for non-users. Other causes of death did not show a relation to Facebook usage, including sexually transmitted diseases, several types of cancer, unintentional injuries, drug overdoses, and suicides. The study did not examine any other social media sites to see if using them prolonged life. Also, two of the researchers worked at Facebook while the study was being conducted. William Hobbs, one of the researchers who was a postdoctorate fellow at Northeastern University and co-author of the study, worked at Facebook as a research intern in 2013. Hobbs said that Facebook agreed not to interfere with the research, no matter what the result was. But he added, researchers were pretty confident that we were going to find this result. The researchers were careful to say that that their results showed an associative relationship between using Facebook and living longer, not a causal one. In other words, researchers did not prove that using Facebook makes someone live longer. The study simply showed a connection between a longer life and some activities users do on Facebook. The researchers say the findings may be able to help show how online social networks can help improve people's health on a global scale.
This is What's Trending Today. As you read stories about the American elections, you may be seeing a lot of unfamiliar words. Some of the wording relates to the election of Donald Trump as President of the United States. But what do words like stunning and status quo mean? Many people are calling Trump's victory stunning. The New York Times newspaper wrote that Trump's stunning upset over Clinton has shocked the world. Sometimes the word stunning means very beautiful or pleasing. It can be used to describe a work of art or an image of snow-covered mountains. But in this case, stunning means surprising, according to Merriam-Webster's Learner's Dictionary. One phrase you may have heard over the past 24 hours is status quo. Status quo is not an English word, but it is used fairly often to describe the way things are today compared to other times. Status quo is an everyday expression taken directly from Latin. It may be used without any changes in your native language, too. The term can be used to describe the motivation of many American voters. Political scientists say many people were not happy with the status quo, so they voted for Trump. And that's what's trending today. I'm Ana Mateo.
For VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. Today, we're going to talk about using the subjunctive. English speakers use the subjunctive to express a wide variety of unreal or possible situations. Today, we will only focus on how to use the subjunctive with a noun clause to express urgency or importance. For example, I suggest that you arrive early. The subjunctive offers speakers a polite and diplomatic way to tell someone to do something or stress that something is very important. It is a useful alternative to a direct command. A mother might tell a child, "Stop eating with your hands." How can we be polite and stress urgency at the same time? We suggest that you use the subjunctive. Instead of the direct command, "Stop eating with your hands," you could say, "It is important that you eat with a fork." Imagine you are a supervisor. You want your employee to stop being late for work. You could say, "Come to work on time." But a more polite way would be to use the subjunctive. "It is very important that you come to work on time." Or, "It is essential that you manage your time more efficiently." In most situations, the speaker using the subjunctive has power over the listener. In our examples, the mother has power over the child. The boss has power over the employee. There are two common structures for the subjunctive. The first one uses a verb followed by that, followed by the object, followed by the simple form of the verb. For example, his father demanded that he join the army. In this example, demanded is the verb. That marks the beginning of the noun clause. He is the object, and join is the subjunctive verb. That is optional. You could also say, his father demanded he join the army. The most common verbs that are followed by the subjunctive are advise, ask, propose, suggest, request, and insist. Listen for the subjunctive in this conversation between cartoon characters Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. In this scene, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck come across Elmer Fudd, a hunter who is looking for rabbits.
It's true, Doc. I'm a rabbit, all right. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till you get home? Shoot him now! Shoot him now! You keep out of this. He doesn't have to shoot you now. He does so have to shoot me now. I demand that you shoot me now.
The subjunctive sentence in the dialogue is, I demand that you shoot me now. Daffy Duck meant to say, I demand that you shoot him now. Him referring to Bugs Bunny. But Bugs Bunny, being a smart rabbit, confused Daffy by changing the pronoun from him to me. Listen again.
It's true, Doc. I'm a rabbit, all right. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till you get home? Shoot him now! Shoot him now! You keep out of this. He doesn't have to shoot you now. He does so have to shoot me now. I demand that you shoot me now.
The second form of the subjunctive uses it is followed by an adjective, followed by that, followed by the simple form of the verb. For example, it is vital that he take his medicine. Remember, there is no third person S in the subjunctive. Don't say, it is vital that he takes his medicine. Fortunately, there are only a few adjectives that are used in this form of the subjunctive. Here are some examples. It is essential that you bring your wallet. It is imperative that you read the instructions. It is important that she arrive on time. It is necessary that she book the ticket in advance. Politicians love to use the subjunctive because it gives a serious and authoritative tone to what they are saying. Listen to Florida Senator Marco Rubio using the subjunctive in a 2015 speech. At the time, he was seeking to become the presidential nominee of the Republican Party.
And I just think it's critically important that the next president of the United States be someone that understands the 21st century and has ideas that will make America, allow America to fulfill its potential.
A good way to practice the subjunctive is to listen to political speeches in English. You are likely to hear both of the forms that we discussed today. There are many other ways that English speakers use the subjunctive. We covered some of them in our episodes on conditionals and advanced conditionals. Another common use is to express wishes, as we showed in our episode on modals of certainty and hope. Until next time, remember, it is important that you learn the subjunctive. For Everyday Grammar, I'm Jill Robbins.
Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world.